And now a follow-up to a conversation we began last week, how to ensure your children's well-being after you die. In the wake of all the attention being focused on Michael Jackson's children, we decided to talk about what every parent of young children needs to think about. But we realized there was one topic we needed to address more thoroughly, the financial and legal complexities faced by gay parents. We decided to ask Alvin Hall, Tell Me More's regular contributor on matters of the economy and personal finance, to weigh in on the subject. And we also welcome back attorney Shantice Curry Try. She practices family law in Baltimore. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good to be here.
Now, let's review. Shantice, you told us that there's a basic document every parent needs, and that is a will. Why?
Well, a will, which is a document that you identify to whom you're going to leave your property to when you do die. You can leave your property to anyone in whatever proportion, and you can also identify who's going to be the guardian of your children. It's a very important document because if you don't have one, then the state in which you live in is going to provide one for you. And the bad news is that it usually does not carry out your wishes when you die.
Is a will particularly important for a gay parent?
Absolutely important, because if there is no will, the law of intestacy, which is the will that's put in place by the state if you don't have one, will take effect. And that law of intestacy that is in every state discriminates against same-sex couples. They are not addressed, and they have no rights to the estate of the person who passes.
Alvin, are there specific financial issues that you think gay parents should address?
Yes, I do, especially when you have biological parent and a non-biological parent who are part of the couple. Very clearly, the non-biological parent should adopt the child. That will give them a legal standing as a parent that they would not otherwise have. And when they're putting money away for the child or making their will, if the biological parent, for example, dies and leaves the estate or the money to the non-biological parent, the fact that they've adopted that child will make that much easier and less subject to challenge.
And Shantice, there are 6 states which currently recognize same-sex marriage. What about states that don't recognize same-sex marriage?
Well, in those states, which is Maryland is one of them, the law says that there is no de facto parentage in Maryland, which basically means that if you're not the biological parent and you've not adopted the child, you have no rights to custody or visitation of that child unless the biological parent consents to it in writing and it's signed by a judge and becomes a court order.
What if the parent has been functioning as a parent all along? I mean, if you're in a state that does not recognize same-sex marriage, but you have lived as a family, the non-biological parent, or let's say that they're both adoptive parents, have functioned in a parental role, does the court recognize that?
The court will only recognize the adoptive parent. If the parent has not adopted the child and that parent is not a biological parent, there are no rights that that parent can assert to that child. So all the love in the world and nurturing in the world does not equal a legal right to the non-biological parent.
But Shantice, even if there is a will, you cannot will children. A court can still supersede a will when it comes to children. So what are the most important things that one needs to do to try to see that your wishes are carried out?
Well, if we're talking about children, I think what's very important is to establish the parental relationship before there's a death by way of a judgment from a court, which means a legal proceeding has to happen to establish that relationship. It can be as simple as having both parents consent to a custody and visitation arrangement and having that ordered or signed off by a court so that that can be recognized, so it can be legally recognized that that relationship exists. And then also having it spelled out in a will as to who will be the guardian of the children should a death occur.
Shantice, what happens when there's money involved? If one member of a same-sex couple dies and leaves a will giving money to that partner, but they have not adopted that child, the one who has left the money has not adopted that child, can the parents of the spouse who died come in and grab the money?
Oh, absolutely. If it's not spelled out as to who is going to not only get the asset but manage the affairs of the estate, you're going to leave a loophole open for family members, other heirs to the estate to come in and take those assets.
How often should these arrangements be revisited? And it sounds to me like it's particularly important to stay on top of the legal paperwork if you're part of a same-sex family, same-sex couple or same-sex couple parenting children or a gay individual parenting a child by yourself.
I would suggest that every life-changing event, so that would be the adoption of a child, a birth of a child, a divorce, a separation, moving from one place to another, are always good times to look over the documents that you have in place and see if they're still effective.
And that makes sense, because you're saying that the laws may vary from jurisdiction to a jurisdiction. So if you move to another state, it may make sense
exactly.
to revisit all of the paperwork pertaining to your family arrangements. That's something that I don't think, Alvin, I don't think I would have thought of that. And Alvin, final no. thought from you, is there a final word of wisdom that you have for people in same-sex couples who are parenting children, or a gay individual parenting a child by himself? The most important thing you would urge folks to do to make sure that their wishes are carried out?
Get a will and make sure you have a great lawyer put that will together. And if you move from one state to another, have that will reviewed by a lawyer in the new state so that you're not left in a situation where all of your wishes can be cast aside.
Alvin Hall is our regular contributor on matters of personal finance and the economy. He joined us from our New York bureau. Attorney Shantice Curry Tri practices family law in Baltimore. She joined us from her office in Baltimore. Thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel in Washington.
And I'm Madeline Brand in California. President Obama promises to overhaul the nation's healthcare system so that more people are covered in an economically responsible way. Critics, including some Democrats, say his plan doesn't do enough to control costs. The White House says Congress could help by ceding control of some of those costs to an expert panel. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Minnesota's Mayo Clinic is famous for providing world-class medical care. It's also one of the healthcare industry's great bargains, with costs 28% below the national average. Mayo President Denny Cortes says the U.S. should aim for that combination of high quality and low cost that he calls higher value care.
And by higher value, we mean better outcomes, better results, better safety, better service, at lower costs over time.
Unfortunately, Cortes says, the healthcare legislation that's appeared so far would do little to encourage that kind of care.
We don't see anything in there that is of any real substance with regard to paying for value. To us, that's real healthcare reform, paying for value.
So late last week, the Obama administration stepped forward with an 11th-hour tourniquet. The president called for an independent council of medical experts to oversee Medicare payments and recommend cost-saving changes.
Our proposal would change incentives so that providers will give patients the best care, not just the most expensive care, which will mean big savings over time.
The government already has a Medicare Advisory Commission, but its advice on cost-cutting is often ignored by lawmakers. The president's plan would give teeth to the recommendations by requiring Congress to approve or disapprove them as a package, much as it did with the Military Base Closing Commission.
What we want to do is force Congress to make sure that they are acting on these recommendations to bend the cost curve each and every year.
The administration suggests one way to bend the cost curve down would be to change the way doctors and hospitals are paid. Massachusetts, for example, is exploring a system that would set fixed prices for treating patients of a given age with a given illness. MIT economist John Gruber says the idea is to discourage unnecessary tests and procedures that often go along with the existing fee-for-service model.
The fee-for-service model is sort of like asking the butcher how much steak you should eat. Basically, the fee-for-service model just rewards doctors the more that they do. This would be the opposite. In this model, doctors would get a fixed amount no matter how much they did.
That's a pretty radical overhaul. But there are examples, including the Mayo Clinic, where doctors are on salary, so they have no financial incentive to order extra procedures. Mayo's Cortes strongly supports the idea of using an expert panel to recommend such changes. He says by adjusting Medicare payments, the government could have ripple effects throughout the healthcare system.
It will change the delivery system over time, and it will end up getting the country where we've all been saying we'd like to be, and that is getting our money's worth.
The White House argues that using an expert panel to recommend changes every year would provide flexibility to adjust to changing needs. It also allows the administration to promise health care savings in the future without having to detail just how those savings would be achieved. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
As we just heard, Los Angeles County voted to sue the state if it goes through with its plan to borrow local tax dollars. One of the people who voted today to do that is Los Angeles County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, how much money is this going to cost you, is going to cost Los Angeles County?
It's going to cost Los Angeles County several hundred million dollars. It's going to cost counties and cities throughout California over $4 billion. And it doesn't solve the state's problem. That's the tragedy of all this. They're balancing their budgets on the backs of local governments, but they are not solving the generic problem that they have in Sacramento, which is that they're spending beyond their means. They're spending more than they're taking in. They don't solve that problem by dipping into local government's reserves. This isn't their money. This is local government money generated by local taxpayers for local programs. They're basically putting their sticky fingers in our pocketbooks and using it to balance their budget. They can't keep doing that. They won't be able to do that next year for an encore. What do when they're still $4 or $5 billion out of whack?
What will that translate into, all that money that they'll take from your budget? What does that mean in terms of you not being able to provide certain services?
Well, our services in counties in California are largely human services, health, mental health, child welfare, welfare itself. We serve the most vulnerable people in our society. So when you take $500 million out of our hide, it means that our ability to serve the most vulnerable among us has been diminished. It is an insidious situation. The state raiding local money, in the case of counties, local money that is used to help the most vulnerable, to cover for their profligate spending. It's absolutely pathetic and unbelievable.
Now, they do say they will pay some of it back later.
Well, we don't know that yet. That's been reported in the news, but so far, none of the reports that I've had from people in Sacramento with whom I've spoken are talking about a borrowing. They're talking about a taking. We'd prefer, if we have to pick our poison, that they borrow under the state constitutional provision that allows them to borrow once every 10 years from local government, that they do that, because then we would be assured of being paid back, and we could borrow against that guarantee. But they have, for the time being, chosen just to take the money take other monies, redevelopment monies, other monies that they're entitled, that we're entitled to, transportation funds, gas tax money, and that doesn't require them to pay that back. So right now, it's a taking. It's not a borrowing.
Now, obviously, everyone is in a very, very difficult position. Lawmakers haggled for weeks over this budget. The Assembly Speaker is a Democrat, Karen Bass. She's from Los Angeles, and presumably she didn't have a lot of other options. Did you speak with her and other fellow Democrats?
I spoke with her, and I spoke with other leaders of the legislature and other Democrats and Republicans. Look, they're in a tough spot, and I'm certainly not going to take a shot at them individually. The problem is a collective problem. It didn't start with this legislature or this governor. It's been going on for more than a decade. No one believes that you can solve a $26 billion deficit, which the state has, on cuts alone. And even the state didn't do it on cuts alone. What they did was take it out of other people's monies. They said they didn't pass any new taxes. Well, they just taxed local government $4 billion. Every county and city in California considers that it's just been taxed, and it's been whacked. I would have expected a little more statesmanship from all of the people up there, including the governor. The governor has been saying for months that let's really fix the problem once and for all in California. Let's not kick the can down the road. Let's not use gimmicks. Let's not use a borrowing. Let's do it right. And what did they end up announcing last night? Gimmicks, kicking the can down the road, deferring the major solutions to the major problems the state has for the next governor and for the next legislature. It's shame on them.
Now, the legislature is set to vote on it this week, maybe on Thursday. What if they don't vote on it?
I hope that they that there are some legislators who have the courage to buck their leadership on this. I don't think most of the legislators know what's in the package. They certainly didn't know what it was last night. They don't know that one of the provisions that was inserted into this deal is an amendment to redevelopment law in California, which will facilitate the city of industry underwriting the development of infrastructure for a new professional football stadium. To me, it's just galling that we would find the mechanism to facilitate a football stadium, but we can't find the mechanism to provide for hungry children.
Zev Yaroslavsky is a Los Angeles County supervisor. The Board of Supervisors has voted to sue the state if it goes ahead with a plan to seize local money to balance the budget. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel in Washington.
And I'm Madeline Brand in California. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said today that the rate of decline in the U.S. economy has slowed significantly. But he told lawmakers that the Fed will continue to aggressively pump money into the economy until a recovery has clearly taken hold. Well, some wonder whether that might cause inflation later on. NPR's John Itzty has more.
Chairman Bernanke's report to Congress didn't begin until 10 o'clock this morning, but members of the House Financial Services Committee had already gotten a preview of his main message. It came in the form of an op-ed piece in today's Wall Street Journal. The article outlined how, when the time was right, the Fed would pull back the huge amount of stimulus it's injected into the economy to fight the recession. Bernanke was responding to concerns in financial markets and on Capitol Hill that the Fed might leave the stimulus in place too long. That was troubling Florida Republican Bill Posey as he questioned the Fed chief.
Certainly, unless that money gets sucked back in and out of circulation, it's going to cause inflation. There's no denying it.
If it's not sucked back in, but as I was describing, we have ways of sucking it back in.
How?
Bernanke went on to describe a variety of ways to pull the stimulus out of the economy. But he acknowledged that timing, knowing when to ease up on the accelerator, will be the tricky thing.
It's a very difficult problem. And even though, you know, we have these unusual circumstances, it's really the same problem we always face, which you just pointed out, is picking the right moment to begin to tighten and picking the appropriate pace of tightening.
But Bernanke was quite clear the Fed won't step on the brake anytime soon. Although there have been some recent glimmers of hope, the Fed chairman made clear he doesn't expect the economy to recover rapidly.
Consumer sentiment, for example, has improved somewhat as the stock market has gone up and as the outlook has looked better and as the job situation has at least stopped deteriorating quite as quickly as it was. But I want to be clear that we have a very long haul here because even though if the economy begins to turn up in terms of production, unemployment is going to stay high for quite a while, and so it's not going to feel like a really strong economy.
While the economy still needs the stimulus provided by the Fed and Congress, Bernanke warned that congressional spending associated with this crisis is unsustainable in the long run. He advised lawmakers to come up with a roadmap to reduce massive deficits soon. And he said the plan must deal with the rising cost of health care.
A critical element of fiscal sustainability in the long term is the cost of health care. So whether we adopt a new program or reform or whether we stick with the status quo, I do think we need to address that 2.5% faster than per capita income growth in health care costs.
Bernanke also engaged the lawmakers in a discussion of financial regulatory reform. He defended the Fed's record as a consumer regulator under his watch. The Obama administration is proposing to strip the Fed of its consumer protection authority. Bernanke said the Fed would like to remain involved and has important expertise to offer in that area. John Idstey, NPR News, Washington.